Game on.
Rugby.
Now, you are very welcome back to Game On, because the rugby season is edging closer to a return. I am very excited. I know you are too. And the man sitting across from me, I'm sure, is extremely excited for the return of rugby, Bernie Jackman. Lots to get through. But the interprovincial scene is returning. The international scene is ongoing with the Irish women's team over in Japan. But I want to begin our conversation because the AIL season is also returning as well. I saw a few snaps on LinkedIn of your own Bechtov back pre-season. How are things going? Exciting. Looking forward to getting back stuck into it.
Yeah, I think we mightn't be as far along in pre-season as a lot of the pro teams. But I think the latter end of August is always a sign for domestic rugby players that they need to start rocking up to the club again on Tuesday, Thursday. So we've had a good prep so far in Bechtov, and you're looking forward to getting started. Our season starts in 3 weeks, so at the same weekend actually, ironically, as the URC. So it's going to be busy, but yeah, looking forward to it.
A happy day as well. Certainly very best of luck with that. However, you mentioned the URC there, and we are going to begin with Connacht, because Connacht Rugby have announced a restructuring of their coaching unit ahead of the new season. Andy Friend, who has served as head coach since 2018, has moved to a new position of director of rugby, where he will have overall responsibility for the rugby programme across our professional setup, said a Connacht statement. Friend's move to director of rugby will see Peter Wilkins assume the role of head coach for the new campaign, where he will have responsibility for leading on-field preparation of the team, as well as primary responsibility for defence. The rest of the coaching team will consist of Colm Tucker, who moves to a new role of scrum and contact coach. Mossy Lawler takes over as attack and skills coach, and forwards coach Dewalt Senecal, who has responsibility for line-out and maul. Bernard, in general, for our listeners, why do some clubs have directors of rugby? Why do some clubs not have that management structure?
Look, I think it depends on the profile of the person. So the person in this situation is Andy Friend. So over the last couple of years, I think he has step back from the training pitch. He sees his role as to develop a coaching group, and he took a punt on Colm Tucker and Mossy Lawler when he brought them in, when he moved them up to the senior squad last year from the academy, and he's trying to mould them and develop them. And obviously with Peter Wilkins, he's a guy he's had initially as a defence coach. Last year he was a senior coach. Now he was mainly looking after attack last year, with Colm Tucker looking after defence, but now he's gone back to being predominantly looking after defence and obviously the on-field overall rugby programme. So I do think it's down to the personality. You see someone like Graham Rowntree in Munster, he wants to coach. He says, you know, he's very much on the field. His personality, the way he operates, is very hands-on. And I think that's what clubs do from, you know, depending on the profile of the person that's in position or they're going to hire, they adapt and they try and take away responsibility from. So Friendy's a little bit unusual in that, you know, he oversees the recruitment, but Connacht have a guy, Tim Onutt, who does the negotiations with the agents. Leo Cullen's the director of rugby effectively in Leinster. So yeah, it really depends. Dan McFarland, you know, he's hands-on and a head coach. So it depends on the personality and often the age profile. Normally the longer head coaches are in position, the more they move upstairs a little bit and oversee the whole programme rather than be involved in the day-to-day coaching.
How would you rate or surmise Andy Friend as a head coach in Connacht? Because he's been there for, 4 years now?
Yeah, I think he's done a great job. We have to remember the resources they have, even for a staff, even for a coaching team. You know, it wouldn't take a rocket science to work out that that's not the most expensive coaching staff to put together. So he works with limitations. I think his character and personality, his openness, his positivity is a key factor in this job, because he's been able to get brilliant performances out of Connacht even after some very tough days, and he's been able to lift the spirits, which is key in that position. And I think he's made a big impact, and he's been a really smart recruit by the Connacht board.
How will this restructuring benefit Connacht for the season ahead? Specifically, do you feel, or
yeah?
Do you
look, I think it's interesting. I think there has been a softness to them defensively for the last 4 or 5 years, to be honest. They're capable, you know, of defending well, but unfortunately, when things don't go their way, they can ship big you know, a lot of points. We saw that on numerous occasions last year. Obviously, the most high profile was in the return match against Leinster in the Aviva, but there was times during the URC as well, particularly in Galway, actually, where you know, the floodgates opened up and they looked very poor. So Wilkins has gone back to that, and that's going to be interesting for him. You'd wonder maybe the new voice need to come in there, because obviously he had the reins. But the most important thing for Connacht, I think, is that this coaching group find a way of making Connacht harder to score against. They're a brilliant team, ball in hand. Their attack is as good as nearly any team in the competition. But when they're on a bad day, it gets very bad.
What would you expect to see from Connacht? Like, how far away are they from reaching those heights of, what was it, 6 years ago now?
Yeah, look at it. It's hard to see it. It's probably, I think next season, ironically, could be their best chance being a World Cup year. Not this season, coming. And obviously the URC has improved immeasurably now with the addition of the South Africans. It looks like Wales are going to get some kind of agreement on funding. But yeah, it's going to be difficult. I think they're a brilliant team to watch, but I just think they need probably another million to have realistic expectations of winning it.
Okay, well, it will be interesting. I suppose that goes back then to the point you're making about resources there as well. And interesting, you mentioned perhaps maybe a fresh voice, because we've seen it with a soccer team actually in Connacht with Sligo Rovers. When Liam Buckley departed, John Russell stepped up from assistant manager to manager, and they've done really well. So it is interesting how different sports teams adapt. As I mentioned in the news headlines before, move on to Munster, Bernard, Connacht have to change the venue of a match over in South Africa because of a Justin Bieber concert. Bieber fan?
My daughter is. I know very little about it, to be honest. Okay. I'm showing my age here, or maybe good taste in music.
That was the pressing question here. Never mind this rugby stuff. It was like, what music Bernie Jackman listens to? Listen, Munster playing the Springboks.
Yeah.
Great occasion, and perhaps one that we might see in Cork, but not necessarily a rugby venue.
Yeah, no, it's interesting, the speculation around Páirc Uí Chaoimh. Obviously, they're going to have to go get permission. I actually was disappointed with the upswing in revenue. You know, it's been speculated it would only be an extra €200,000 to Munster to move it. Obviously, there's increased costs of renting the stadium, etc. So, realistically, from a coffers point of view, it's probably going to not have a massive effect on the bottom line. It's just whether it would be nice for Cork to maybe get the fixture, you know what I mean? And there's certainly been talk about a bit of a divide between Cork and Limerick. Obviously, now with the centre of excellence being in Limerick, the big games are at Thomond Park. But in some ways, I love the history that Thomond has for these international clashes. So I don't know. Look, it would be fascinating to see it in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. I think it's brilliant that the Springboks have agreed to play a midweek game. You know, there's been some unbelievable clashes with Munster, with international sides on tours. And obviously the Razzie Erasmus, Jack Ninabar connection there. And we know Munster are struggling a little bit. So anything they can do to drive revenue, and I suppose also from a sporting point of view, it'll be a Thursday night game they all want to watch. So it'll be interesting to see where it's played, but I think it's a brilliant boost for Irish rugby that South Africa are playing a second game here, the World Champions. Yeah.
So Munster overturn the Springboks, this game will be championing now in 50 years time. Like,
it'll be a play. Exactly, play about it.
Listen, you mentioned URC is 3 weeks away. We will be doing a detailed preview on all the Irish provinces and indeed the team overall. But Graham Rowntree was up in front of the media yesterday, and he mentioned he was excited stepping into the unknown. Are you cautiously optimistic, or should Munster fans be cautiously optimistic to not expect too much too soon?
No, look, I'm really excited to see what he does. His attitude, he understands and has bought into the history of Munster rugby quickly. He's a charismatic guy. He's stepping up for the first time. He's bringing energy, bringing Mike Prendergast back. He's bringing an experienced, quality coach back. Leamy coming back from Leinster. You know, he's a legend down there. He'll bring that enthusiasm and what he learned in Leinster. And then Andy Kiraku stepping up from the academy. So I watched Munster's underage play Leinster in three games at the weekend in Donnybrook, and they actually, the Munster schools beat Leinster schools. Okay. For the first time in a long time. The 19s were very competitive, so there is young talent there. I think it's brilliant as well for Graham. You know, he's had this little block without the internationals, so not that they'll come back in and they'll be a boost to him, but he probably is getting a chance to see new leaders, new people step up, you know, and they say, you know, a fresh brush sweeps clean. So even though it's not totally fresh because he's been part of it, I think Prendergast and Leamy will add a lot. And yeah, I am looking forward to seeing it. They probably need, they're probably short front rows. They're short a big hooker. They're short backup tight heads, or maybe a starting tight head. But they've signed two very good centres. One from Bristol, Frisch, who's grew up in France but Irish qualified, and Fekitoa, obviously the All Blacks. So they've recruited pretty well. Snyman should be back, and he's a world class player. So it's not all gloom and doom. In actual fact, I think if you're a Munster fan, you'd be excited about the season.
Yeah, I think Munster fans are waiting with expectancy for Snyman to return. Rugby fans, I should say, in general, are waiting for Snyman to return, because we certainly haven't seen the best of him in the URC, and we'll be interested to see how it goes. And yeah, listen, you know, there is so much to look forward to on that front with the URC returning very soon. But international rugby is ongoing, and John McKee says Ireland must clinch back-to-back victories against Japan in Tokyo on Saturday if they wish to rank their historic tour as really successful. Ireland, of course, produced a stunning comeback in their series opener in Shizuoka, rallying from 15-0 down to claim a 9-try, 57-22 success. The sides meet again in Tokyo this weekend, and former Fiji head coach McKee, who joined the Ireland management team as technical advisor and defence coach for the Japan tour, has pinpointed a number of areas for improvement. Bernard, is it fair to say this is a new era for Irish women's rugby? You know, I'm trying to avoid the word transition, but it's a balanced team of youth and experience.
Yeah, it is. And look at the negativity that was there for quite a long time seems to be gone. There's obviously rumours or a very strong possibility of contracts for these players when they come back, which is a step forward and will hopefully allow them compete or get closer to the, obviously, the Englands and Frances who were setting a marker in the Northern Hemisphere. But I thought some of the skills they showed against Japan, plus the resilience. It was a very young Irish team, and to go 15-0 down in Japan, you know, it's not easy to stay composed, and they just built their way back into the game. And McKee's right. I mean, you know, they blew away Japan in the end, and you know, if this team are going to mature, and obviously, you know, they've got World Cup qualifications and all that stuff ahead of them, a back-to-back win away from home will be a huge boost. You know, I think they're good enough to do it. He's obviously been around the block. He coached me in Connacht years ago. He's been involved in a lot of international rugby, and he knows how important it is and the benefit of winning away on tour. And yeah, it's a phenomenal opportunity for them.
From what you saw last week, would you be hopeful of the similar result come this weekend?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, the game plan was spot on. They exposed a lot of the Japanese frailties in defence, and I think they're going to get massive confidence from that. So I'd say they were going into that game a little bit unsure of where they were at, but they're in good physical condition. The self-belief must be massive, and it looks like they're starting to build a game plan that they're all very comfortable with. So yeah, you'd have to fancy Ireland.
Okay, good stuff. Well, very best of luck to Ireland and Japan. Before you do go, Bernard, sticking with the international rugby narrative, and just to mention, we will be previewing in detail that Ireland-Japan match on Friday evening's show, so do tune in for that one. But World Cup winner Tawere Kerr-Barlow has voiced his desire to play for Australia. Apologies if I've butchered the pronunciation of his Christian name. The former All Black made the stunning revelation in an interview with French publication Rugby Rama. The scrum half's international career appeared to have come to an end when he joined French side La Rochelle in 2019, as New Zealand do not select overseas-based players for test squads. However, a new law introduced by World Rugby last year has opened the door for Kerr-Barlow to make a shock switch to the Wallabies. The new law allows a player to change national team once in their career if they were born in the country they wish to transfer to, or have a parent or grandparent born in that country and have been stood down from test level for 3 years. Kerr-Barlow, a member of the 2015 World Cup winning All Black squad, was born in Australia and won the last of his 29 caps for New Zealand back in 2017. What are your thoughts on that one, Bernard?
Hey, look, he meets the criteria. I think we all, when this law change came on board, we all thought of the examples of the Pacific Island players who had been poached or had been nationalised to play for one of the tier one countries. We didn't expect a player to jump from New Zealand to Australia. But when you read into it, his wife is an Australian citizen. His mum and dad are Australian. He was born in Melbourne. You know, he genuinely has as much... he meets more criteria than a lot of players playing, for other countries. It's just strange when you see an All Black going to play for Australia. And I haven't seen what the Australian Rugby Union have said, but obviously he's not coming out saying that unless there's been some kind of a link. And that's going to make it interesting. You can play for two countries now over the course of your career if you meet that criteria of not being involved for 3 years. But as I said, it was more around guys like Charles Piatau being able to go back to play for Tonga that we all thought it was a great... rule change, because it's going to strengthen those countries who don't have the financial ability to make it lucrative enough for those players to stay. But this is a strange one, and it's one I actually didn't know he was born in Australia, etc.
Yeah.
He's a good player, be very good for La Rochelle. And actually, it's not just the international implication. When Ron Nogara recontracted him, or when John O'Gibbs signed him, they were signing him on the basis that he weren't going to be playing international rugby. And you factor it in. You know, the guys who are not going to be playing international rugby anymore, which Carballo wouldn't have been, having left New Zealand, are worth more. You know, so there's going to be accountants scratching their heads and asking coaches questions. But yeah, it's the rules.
Does it diminish like the aura of the All Blacks? Because like, I'm basing this on a complete, probably porky, that I was told back in my Donnybrook Leinster season ticket supporting days with my baggy Bank of Scotland jersey on and whatnot, but that they didn't even sell New Zealand jerseys to the public because it was an honour to play for the All Blacks, and you have to earn your right to wear that jersey. Like, he's earned his right to wear that jersey, and now I know he was born in Australia, but like...
Yeah, well, look, I think that's the issue. Professionalism has taken away a lot of what we took as being special. And the All Blacks jersey, you're right, when a new All Black gets called into the squad, there's a 3-day initiation period where they're... You know, the CEO meets them, they walk the halls of the New Zealand Rugby Football Union, they're shown photographs and told stories about famous All Blacks, and they make it special. But I suppose a guy like him, he's gone now since 2017. He's been earning his living in Europe. He obviously feels a strong affinity with Australia, and the rules allow him to potentially change code once more. So, I don't think it's going to be a huge amount of numbers of players, particularly going from Tier 1 to Tier 1, but... To be honest, it is hard to really be totally at peace with, to be honest, for me. I have no issue, and I think it's brilliant that if we can strengthen, those Pacific Island nations or Georgia, for a certain extent, who lost some players to France, etc. But this Tier 1 to Tier 1, it's a little bit awkward, and I haven't really come to terms with it yet.
Yeah, well, it will be interesting. That's not even mentioning the Italian-Argentinian prop, who wasn't even Italian.
There's been loads of... Unfortunately, it was very loose in the early stages of professionalism. Yeah. And in Wales, there was a couple of instances as well where guys played under Granny Gate but didn't have a granny who was Welsh qualified. Yeah, so look, we're not...
We're opening the can of worms.
We're not white and white, so this guy genuinely does meet the criteria. Maybe fair play to him.
No, absolutely. Bernard Jackman, pleasure as always. Sorry, before we do, is that what you do, by the way? Walk the lads through the halls of Bechtov and everything?
Yeah,
history.
We've got some good photographs and there's good history there, but our initiation process isn't 3 days, I'll tell you that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a few beers.
I don't think it's fun to share on the radio.
It's a few beers in the bar after hopefully a win. Yeah.
Listen, Bernie Jackman, gentlemen, as always, really appreciate that chat. We are going to be chatting Gaelic football in a few moments' time, so stick with us here on Game On 2FM. 2FM.